Yerushalayim Meir Kodesh, and welcome back to the Kollel. Wherever they are in the globe, let's say good evening to those who are here. And as our Cornfield Sleeter mentioned, today we'll discuss the status of Beit Sha'an in light of the Gemara in Chulin, Davav Amadeus, and Daf Zayin Amad Aleph, which we'll get to in a moment. I think the all the sources are posted, and we're ready to go. The Gemara in Chulin Daf Vav Amud Beis says like this: Hey, Rabbi Shua ben Zilas ben Chomer shel Rabbi Meir lifnei Rabbi, Rabbi Meir shorachol al reshiyek v'reit shan. Rabbi Shua ben Zilas, the son of Rabbi Meir's father-in-law, testified to Rabbi that Rabbi Meir was once in Beit Shan, and he ate a leaf of a vegetable without taking maaser. And when Rabbi heard this, the Ikri Rabbi as Beit Sha'an Kula Al Yadu. When Rabbi heard this, he ruled that all of Beit Sha'an is considered Chutz La'aretz. And one thing, I will not go into the details of the Machlokas and the Rishonim over here. If it's Chutz La'aretz, which mitzvahs apply and which mitzvahs don't apply? Rashi says it only applies to mitzvahs Drabanan, like Ma'aser Yerek, which is Drabanan in the first place. There's a big machlokas and we've shown them exactly how it goes, but we will not focus on that. As I usually focus on my shiurim, we discuss the, we combine what the Gemara says with the historical archaeological evidence, and to understand the Gemara better, to understand the situation better, and then, time permitting, we'll also discuss the practical application of Beit Sha'an today. The practical application of Beit Sha'an today, whether or not the dinim of Eretz Yisrael apply in Beit Sha'an or not. So the Gemara tells a story, as we mentioned, that Rebbe got testimony that Rav Meir did not mice or something that he ate in Beit Sha'an, and Rebbe was matir the entire Beit Sha'an. By the way, this source, if you have the source page, the Hebrew PDF, source number one, it is source 1.1, and although I quoted the whole Gemara here, I underlined the sections pretty much relevant to us from the Gemara. So that's what the people were upset at him. How could you do such a thing? This was a minhag accustomed to. Okay, so Rebbe said, whatever. Rebbe said, there's no problem. They left me with Shemayim something, room for me to maneuver. So the Gemara asked a question. Matkifla, and I'm going now to the underlined section at the end of 1.1. Matkifla, Rabbi Yudah Ber Mishum and Pasi. Rabbi Yudah Ber Mishum and Pasi asked a question. Omir Kalamandu Amar Deves Shaham Nad Meretz Yisraeli. Is there someone who can even think, who can even say that Beit Sha'an is not part of Eretz Yisrael? V'aksev alo rish menashe, es Beit Sha'an v'et b'noseo, v'esanach v'es b'noseo. And Yeshua tells us that Shevet Menashe got the cities of Tanakh and Beit Sha'an, and Menashe didn't capture them. Okay, so if he didn't capture them, what's the problem? Okay, Menashe didn't capture them in the days of Yeshua. But later on, we know the Sefer Malachim, it says that all the cities that they didn't capture in the days of Yeshua, in the days of Shlomo HaMelech, they were able to make them pay taxes, etc. So in other words, they weren't captured in the days of Yeshua, but they were captured later on. So clearly Beit Sha'an is part of Eretz Yisrael. So how could Rebbe even think, how could Rebbe Meir and Rebbe even think that Beit Sha'an is not Eretz Yisrael? So the Gemara says, Ishtamitze, Yehuda Ber Rav Shimon Pazi forgot, he forgot the statement, there were a lot of cities that the Olei Mitzrayim captured. This is a concept that we're going to be using later on. Also, the difference, Olei Mitzrayim and Olei Bavel. Olei Mitzrayim are those who came out of Mitzrayim, the conquest in the days of Yeshua. That was the conquest of Bayis Rishon. And when they captured Eretz Yisrael got its Kedusha, and all the mitzvahs of Kliyas Baretz, Truman, Meiser, etc., they became Chayavin after 14 years when they came, or some mitzvahs immediately, but the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael came by Olei Mitzrayim in the days of Yeshua. However, V'lo Kavashim Olei Bavel, but the Olei Bavel, the Jews who came back from Kliyas Bavel, came and came to Eretz Yisrael again. So obviously the Gemara is holding here that the Kedusha of Yehoshua is dissolved, is batel, once Nebuchadnezzar captured Eretz Yisrael. There was no longer Kedusha. And when the Oled Babel came, the people returned from Golos Babel, 70 years later, they returned to Eretz Yisrael, they were Mekanish Eretz Yisrael again. And we'll discuss this later on, how exactly they were Mekanish, and the status of what they were Mekanish, etc. But they were Mekanish this later on, and there are a lot of towns that the Oled Mitzrayim captured, but the Oled Babel purposely did not capture, because of the Kedusha was shown Kitcho Lashata of Lokisho Sababa. And they have the opinion that the first Kedusha was Mekanish Lashata for those days, for the time of the first Beis HaMikdash period, but not Lashid Lovel, meaning as the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Kedusha dissolved, and thus we have the second Kedusha. And the second Kedusha was not all over Eretz Yisrael, it was only over small sections of Eretz Yisrael. They left out sections of Eretz Yisrael. What was the purpose? Kedei sheyismuchu aleihem aniyim b'shemitah. In the Shemitah year, people are not growing crops, and and therefore they were matir Beit Sha'an, so that it's not Eretz Yisrael, and this way aniyim, poor people, will have food. So Rashi has his whole sheet of exactly what it means, the poor people will have food, people will be growing crops, so there will be like a chikopeya. There are different opinions. As I said, I'm not going into the whole opinions of how exactly it works, and which mitzvahs apply, and which mitzvahs don't apply. But the bottom line that the Gemara is saying over here, seems to say, is that Beit Sha'an was not captured during the second Beis HaMikdash period. Since it was not captured, it had no Kedusha, and Rebbe came along and realized this based on the way Rebbe behaved, and he was matir the city of Beit Sha'an, and he declared that there's no Kedusha. This is the simple way to learn the Gemara. But things are not so simple as they seem. By the way, it's, the more Gemara mentioned, it says, Habei Kochen. There are a lot of cities that Ole Mitzrayim captured and Ole Babel didn't capture. The Gemara here mentions one. But if you go to source number 1.2, I quote over there a Yerushalmi from Demai. And if you look at the underlined section from that, you have Rabbi Yitir Beit Sha'an. Rabbi was Matir Beit Sha'an. Rabbi Yitir Kesrin. Rabbi was Matir Caesarea. Rabbi Yitir Beit Guvin. Rabbi was Matir Beit Guvin. And Rabbi Yitir Kfar Tzemach. So it mentions over here four places that Rabbi was Matir. Three are major cities in Eretz Yisrael, Beit Sha'an, Caesarea, and Beit Guvin. We'll get to discuss those, Bezrat Hashem. And the fourth is a small town called Kfar Tzemach, which is known today at the southern tip of the Kinneret. There was an Arab village there called Samek, and known as Kfar Tzemach, and existed there until 1948. So Rebbe was matir not only one, but the Habei Kochen, as the Gemara mentioned. So what's the problem? If you look at Rabbi Yaakov Emden already asked a question. Rabbi Yaakov Emden already asked a question from Megillas Tainus. Megillas Tainus, by the way, is source number 4 on our source page. I photocopied it. And Yaakov Emden in Nagos and in his sefer, Maruk Tzion Archaim, Simush involved, asked the following question. The source is from Megillas Tainus. Megillas Tainus, we know, was written in the end of the second Beis HaMikdash. Has a list of all the days that the days of celebration that happened to Klal Yisrael during the second Beis HaMikdash, and when big miracles happened, they declared those days as Yom Tovim. They declared those days as Yom Tovim, and some also an Isser of Hesped. So the list over here in Paragimo Megillas Tainus is talking about the month of Sivan, and it says over here, and this you have on your source number 4, it says over here like this, V'chamisha al-sabei, v'shita al-sabei, go al-anshe beit sha'an v'anshe bukata. on the 15th and the 16th of Sivan, the people of Beit Sha'an went into exile. And then the Megillah Sinai, by the way, is a combination of two sections. There's the original portion, which is brief, and then there's like an explanation, which is like a Gemara term, and it explains that these were people who in the days of the Greeks caused a lot of trouble to Bnei Yisrael. And finally, the days of the and the Kibbutz and Chayv Golos, once they were Chayv and Golos, Gavar Yavon Shabbat Chashmonai, he says over here that they didn't go into Golos, but Yoshua was not able to get rid of them, Zabar HaMelech was not able to get rid of them, and only in the days of Chashmonai, they were able to get rid of them, the Iglu Osam, they served them to Golos, V'osa Yom Asul Yom Tov, and that day was made a Yom Tov. So the 15th and 16th of Sivan are Yom Tov, because the nation, the Goyim, the who are living in Beit Sha'an, who are causing a lot of trouble for the Jews, were finally ousted. So clearly we see here from the Megillah Tainis that indeed Beit Sha'an was captured during the second Beis HaMikdash. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden asked the question, if so, how does the Gemara over here say that the Beit Sha'an was not captured in the days of the second Beis HaMikdash, and they left it because of the poor people, while Megillah Tainis we see clearly Beit Sha'an was captured. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden wants to suggest, as a teretz, that maybe it's because when we say the conquest of Oleg Bavel, when we say Oleg Bavel or Mekadesh, Oleg Bavel is a term only for the beginning of the period when they came back from Bavel, which means they came from Bavel 70 years, the Jews were in Bavel. After that, they came back to Eretz Yisrael. The second place I'm interested for 420 years. But the concept of Oleg Bavel, the Kedusha, that applies to Eretz Yisrael because as a result of Oleg Bavel, is only from the original people who came in the days of Ezra. Anything that Bnei Yisrael captured later on is not considered Kibbutz Oleg Bavel. So therefore, it's not relevant to us the fact that mentions in Megillah Tainis that the Chashmonaim captured Beit Sha'an, because the Chashmonaim are much later. They're hundreds of years later. They're at least 200 years, close to 200 years after Oleg Bavel, and therefore what they capture has no halachic consequences, and therefore Beit Sha'an remains chutzlot. So that's what he suggests, but he rejects that. He says there's no reason for that. So his answer is, as he states clearly in the Maror Ktzira, is as I mentioned, Archan Siman Shin Vav. His answer is that although they captured Beit Sha'an, but they didn't hold on to it for good. They lost it after a while, and the Kedusha of Oleg Bavel applies only to those places that remained in the hands of the Jews until the Churban. But here, that they did not hold on to to Beit Sha'an for a long time. It was later taken away by the Romans, and we'll get to that in a couple of moments, seeing historically how this went. So therefore, the Kedusha does not remain, and therefore Beit Sha'an is no longer Kedusha. The Tzibur HaSa'aretz, of Yosef Schwartz, one of the first modern Frum scholars to investigate the history of Eretz Yisrael and the geography, he takes Rabbi Yaakov Emden's teretz and he says it's very simple. He says when we say Oleg Bavel, we mean only those who came in the days of Ezra. Anything that happened afterwards does not have kedusha, and therefore there's no problem, although they captured the days of the Chashmonaim, but that's it. The days of the Chashmonaim, but that doesn't make Kedusha. The Kedusha only goes from the days of Ezra. That's his suggestion. His suggestion is quite problematic. Two problems. One, it argues with a Beperisha Kesef Mishnah. I even brought the source here, although I didn't quote the Kesef Mishnah, but I brought the source. It's a Rambam in... I say I didn't number all the sources over here. Okay. It's the Rambam in Hilchos Perek Aleph from Hilchos Trumas Halacha Hey, after section 3:1, go down two sections further on the Hebrew PDF source page. Rambam Perek Aleph Michasum Shalocha Hey. Rambam, the second section, right after 3:1. Rambam Milchashmit of Yovo Perek Dal at Alocha Kafchest, on the Hebrew PDF source page, the Rambam writes like this: Eber Hayadin Shviz Nargez Bami Debeya. The Eber Hayadin, the other side of the Jordan River, Shmid is only Drabana. The Shvich Esuri of Eber Hayadin, Bitar and Bachila, etc. The Rambam says the Eber Hayadin Shmid is only Drabana. And in the next paragraph, Pasukas HaRaived, the Rambam says, Omer Avram, Eber Hayadin Maya Tzuch Laviyo Mikal Vachomer, Hayaloch Ziku Ole Baba, V'chein Surya. He says, why did the Rambam have to say that Shemitah is only Drabonon? In Eber Hayadin, it's very simple that it's only Drabonon, because there is no Kedusha of Ole Babel, because Ole Babel never captured Eber Hayadin, and since they never captured Eber Hayadin, the most it is Ole Mitzrayim. And if it's Ole Mitzrayim, then the Shemitah is not Drabonon, as the Rambam went in at length the whole parak. So the Ravid assumes that Eber Hayadin was not captured by Ole Babel. Comes along in the Kesef Mishnah. I didn't print it here, but the Kesef Mishnah says, Who says? Where did the Rabbi get this idea that Eber Hayadin was not captured by Ole Babel? Maybe later on, maybe originally it wasn't captured, but maybe later on, Hashemari kings, we know they were very powerful. We see the Gemara says in Kedusha, that Yanei HaMelech went to a place, Kochris, in the Midbar, and he captured 60 cities. So you see that the Hashemari kings later on were captured more. And by the way, Kochos is probably in Eber Hayadin, although the Kesef Mishnah doesn't say it, but it's probably over there. It mentions in the Midbar, we assume that it's in Eber Hayadin. We know that Yanai did have conquests on the other side of the Jordan River. So the Kesef Mishnah says maybe originally it wasn't captured by Ole Babel, but it might have been captured later on. So what do you see from the Kesef Mishnah? You see from the Kesef Mishnah clearly that any conquest that the Hashmonaim did also has Kedusha of Ole Babel. That Ole Babel is not a limited term for those specific people who made Aliyat Eretz Yisrael from Babel, but rather it applies to the whole period of the second Beis Hamikdash from beginning to end, and anything that was captured during that period has Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. So that's one problem, once again, with the approach of the Tzvus Aretz, who holds otherwise and holds that Ole Babel is limited to those actual people who came from Babel, not only those people came from Babel and nothing later on. That's problem number one. Problem number two is that we're going to introduce you to a brisa that talks about the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, and we'll try to see what the situation was. Now, when it's important to deal with this situation, it's important to use the historical. It's important to use the historical records that we have, and course references, and try to fit it in exactly with what the Gemara says. Now, the one historical record that we have, the main historical, we have two actually, but we can call them one, is basically Josephus. Josephus, who was around in the end of the second Beit Hamikdash in time of the Churban, he wrote Antiquities of the Jews. He wrote a book, The Jewish War Against the Romans, and he over there has a lot of the history of. There's a lot of the history of the second Beit Hamikdash, based on the Book of the Maccabees, based on other books, and we know from him a lot of the history. Now, if you go to the sources, I'd like you to go to source number two. Sources. I can go to source number two, give a second to bring it up. And take a look at this map. And this map, it's in Hebrew, sorry. It's the best I could do under the circumstances. This is a map based on a Mishnah in Masechet Shviyos. Now this Mishnah I printed for you, it's the last Hebrew source on the Hebrew source page. A little, It's source number 2.1 on the Hebrew source page. It's a Mishnah in Shvi'is Perek Tes, and the Mishnah says like this: Sholosh Arosos Levir Yehuda Ve'Eber Hayarden Vagalil. The Mishnah is talking about a din in Shemitah, and in Shemitah the rule is that all the crops are Hefker. The crops are free. They are free. Anyone can take them and take them into his house. But he can keep them into his house until a period that comes that's called Sha'as Abir, the time of Bir. Now, what is the time of Bir? So we know once there are no crops, let's say, we're talking about apples, when there are no apples left on the trees outside, and an animal cannot find any apples for itself, so then any humans that brought food into the house have to take it out and be mafkid. We learn that from Pesach, but since we're not discussing Dinah with Shemitah today, we're not going to go into the full details. But the Mishnah says like this. How do you determine when there's apples on the tree? Let's say one guy has an apple orchard, and there are no apples left, but his neighbor has. So what does that mean? There's no apples left for the animals. The animal can go to the neighboring orchard and get the crops from there. So how do you determine crops? So the Gemara says, Sholosh Arosos Levir. There are three lands, in other words, Eretz Yisrael is divided up into three territories. Yehuda, Ve'eva Hayarden, Ve'agolo. It's divided up into Yehuda, which is Judea, Eva Hayarden, which is the other side of the Yarden, and the Galil, which is the northern region. V'shalosh Arosos Kol Achos V'achos. And each of these is divided into sub-areas. Each territory, like Yehuda, has a mountain region, has a valley region, has a plain, and has a valley. And likewise, in Upper Galil, and Lower Galil, and the valley. So, in other words, they're regions, and each region is considered to itself as machloka exactly how exactly it works. Again, we're not learning Shemitah now, so no reason to go into full details. But the bottom line is that the different regions start to grow, and we know that an animal living in one region can sustain itself if there's any of that type of crop in that region. If the crops are totally finished in that region, so then the animal will not go to a neighboring region and get from there. So that's how we determine the three arosos for Shemitah. So what do we have over here in the list of the three arosos? Look in the again in the Hebrew source page in the bold type. It mentions Yehuda, Eber Hayarden, and the Galil. So we mentioned three regions: Yehuda, which we know is Judea. If you're looking, you're following me on the map. So you see the southern section of Eretz Yisrael is Yehuda. Eva Yarden is on the other side of the Jordan River, which is today Jordan, and the Galil is up north. Now what's the problem with this? The problem is that the central region of the country, which today is known as the Shomron, the whole area of Manasseh and Ephraim, that whole region doesn't appear in the Mishnah. It just doesn't appear. What happened to the central region of the country? Why doesn't that appear in the Mishnah? So there are a couple suggestions. One suggestion is that when we say Eber Hayarden means the bank of the Jordan. It could also mean not only the eastern bank, as you see in the map, it could mean the western bank, meaning what's called the West Bank today is that Eber Hayarden that's mentioned in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah, when it says Eber Hayarden, it's talking about that central region that we were discussing a moment ago that's missing in the middle. So Yehuda is in the south, Eber Hayarden is in the middle, and the Galil is up north. This approach, which is in the Rishonim, indeed, is problematic because the Yerushalmi clearly states the Mishnah only mentions the places in Yehud and Galil, but the Yerushalmi mentions the places in Eber Hayarden, and it gives a whole list of places, and those cities mentioned listed in Eber Hayarden are clearly on the other side of the Jordan River. We know them from Tanakh. All the places mentioned, many of the places mentioned in Sefer, in Chumash Bamidbar, with Reuben Gad and Chatzi Menashe, who remained on the other side of the Jordan River, and mentioned Yoshua, those places are Eva Yarden. So this approach, as we mentioned, is problematic. According to Yerushalmi, clearly when we say Eva Yarden, we are talking about the other side of the Jordan River. And if so, the question is, what happened to the center of the country? And the answer is that when you're looking at the map over here, source number two, when you're looking at the map over here, the map is representing the Jewish population during the beginning of the Second Beis HaMikdash. There's a whole discussion among historians how much We know when Bnei Yisrael came back from Babel, they settled in Yehuda, and we know this from Sefer Ezra. The pasuk says Vayeshu Bnei Yisrael Barim, B'chol Yisrael Barim. All of Klal Yisrael settled everywhere, but there are no historical records of whether there was Jewish population in the Galilee at the time. What happened in Eber Hayarden? Those seems, although the Tanakh doesn't mention, because the list of the places mentioned Tanakh, where those returning from Babel settled, is only in the area of Yehuda. But we know from other sources that in the days of Chashmonaim, for example, in the days of Yehuda Maccabee, there were Jews living in the Galil. And we know that there were Jews living in Eber Hayarden also. One of the incidents that happened 2 months ago, we gave a shiur on Hanukkah. We spoke about the battles, the history of the battles that took place between Yehuda Maccabee and the Greeks. Basically, we finished with the battle of Beit Tzur, which was when the Nes of Hanukkah happened. But after that, the next event, before he battled the Yevanim, was that the Jewish population in other regions of the country started suffering greatly because they were harassed by the Goyish population surrounding them. And it was then that Yehuda Maccabee and one of his brothers went to rescue the Jewish population. Yehuda Maccabee went to places which are believed to be on the other side of the Jordan River, and over there he gathered a lot of Jews who were being harassed in the cities and marched them to Yerushalayim. And one of his brothers, I don't recall his name now, went towards the Galil and chased the enemy to Akko and took the Jews who were living there in that region outside Akko and brought them to Yerushalayim. So clearly we know that there were Jews who were living in the in the other regions. The Jews probably, although you see on the map that they reached the coast, for most of the time they didn't even reach the coast. The coastal population was non-Jewish. These three places are the center of Jewish population. Everything else was non-Jewish population. Who settled the center of the country between Yehuda and Galil? They were the Kusim. Now, the Kusim are also discussed in the Gemara in Chulin. Time permitting, we'll get to that, but I highly doubt that'll happen today. So maybe some other time, Bezrat Hashem. And the Kusim lived in the center of the country. They separated between Yehuda and Galil. The Gemara, for example, in Bava Basra will tell us that the traveling between Yehuda and Galil is Shas Cherem. It's dangerous to travel. We know that the people who came to Yola Regel, they went from Galil, they went through Eber Hayarden to come, instead of going straight south, they went through Eber Hayarden or along the coast. They didn't go through the lands of the Kutim. So this is the core of the Jewish population during the Second Beis Hamikdash. Now, as time went on, the Jews, the Hashmonai kings, became powerful, and they captured the rest of the country. And we'll soon see how far their conquest reached. But the core of the Jewish population remained as it was. If they captured Beit Shaan, as Rabbi Yaakov Emden pointed out, they didn't hold on for it. In other words, there remained a lot of non-Jewish population remained there, and after a while, it became once again a non-Jewish city. So this is the core. This is the core of the population which the Olei Bavel captured. But as we mentioned, there's the conquest of Chashmonaim, and the conquest of Chashmonaim, where it's often the case of Mishnah, has Kedusha. To prove this, historically, we're going to go to another source. First of all, We have two sources over here, source 5 and source 6. Source 5 and source 6. Take a look at source 5. It may take a drop to come up. There's two pictures over there. This is a mosaic floor. This is a picture of a mosaic floor which was found in a place called Rehov, not far from Beit Shaan. We spoke already once about the mosaic floors in nearby shuls, Beit Alpha, Tiberia, Tzipori, which had all types of images. Like the zodiac symbol and images from Tanakh, like the Akedah. But this over here is unique, that what you see over here is an inscription of the mosaic floor that was found, an inscription And it's a little hard to read the way it is, and therefore I finally posted the source number 6. I posted a copy of the text of this mosaic floor. The text is a very interesting text, because it turns out, you go to source number 6, you get to the text, it turns out that it's an inscription which discusses in detail the halachos of Beit She'an regarding the quality is not that great, I'm sorry, but this is the best I could do. I really cannot get it in English, even though I tried. I've yet to find a source where it's printed in English. This is a list of places, Beit She'an and nearby, which have Kedusha Shvi'is and which don't. In this text, there's a list of the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, and then it mentions certain cities that do not have Kedusha. Now, for the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, I printed it on the Hebrew PDF source page, source number 3-1. And source number 3-1, I'm not going to read the whole thing, because it's really, I don't think you get much out of it if I read all these places, which don't mean much to most of us. But if you just look at the first section, it says, Tchum, section 3-1, Tchum Eretz Yisrael, Kol Shechziku Olei Bavel. It has a list of the Tchum of Eretz Yisrael, all the places that Olei Bavel captured, and it goes through a whole list. And today we pretty much have a general idea of places on this list. I mean, one of the places that appears over here, by the way, is Rosh Mei Ga'aton, the head of the source of the Ga'aton, stream of water. Normally during the year there's not much water, but if you come this time, Baruch Hashem, there's been a lot of rain, it's been overflowing, and if you go through the streets of Nahariya, it's been overflowing, flooding the streets of Nahariya. So you can see the Rosh, the Mei Ga'aton, and the source of the Mei Ga'aton, we know where that is too. It has a list of places, and there are different small variations in text between the various sources where this bride is brought. And we have the mosaic floor. The mosaic floor is interesting because we can say that this is the oldest existing text that we have of any brisa. Any text of Torah Sheba'al Peh directly, which we have today, appears in this mosaic, because there's nothing, I shouldn't say there's nothing new on the mosaic, but for the top part of the mosaic, except for the last section, we're familiar with from various sources, from Yerushalmi and Shvi'is, from Yerushalmi and Demai, and from other places. It's not new. But this text was obviously on the floor of the shul, so that the people coming to Davin in this place, near Beit She'an, would know exactly what halach was applied to them, because they are not in Beit She'an, they're near Beit She'an. And a person goes to the market, and he's got to know which produce came from Beit She'an and which produce came from elsewhere. So it has a whole list of produce, what's mutter around Beit She'an, what's usher, how far Beit She'an reaches, etc. And hopefully we'll get to that too as time goes on, later on. So it lists the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael of Tchum Olei Bavel. If you take a look at source number 3, I have a sketch of a map. Source number 3, I have a sketch of a map which is based on the interpretation. There are various interpretations how exactly this the boundaries go, but this is interpretation of Professor Felix. And as you see, it includes all of Eretz Yisrael and lots of sections of Eber HaYadin too. Much more than we saw in the original map, the Yehuda, Eber, Yad, and Ragola, the small sections, this includes the entire country. Now, as we mentioned, except for a few sections here and there, it includes the entire country. Take a look to the east, and you see the Kinneret, and east of the Kinneret, you see the Golan, and then there's a section that goes even farther in from the Golan, which is called today the Choran. Choran, in Tanakh days, and there's a second verse in English, this was called the Trachon. The Targum, on the Pasuk, called Chevel Argov, the Chol HaBashan, the Targum says, Tlach Trachona, the area of the Trachon, which is this area over here. And by the way, in modern days, the Jews tried settling there also. Baron Rothschild, 100 years ago, bought 100,000 dirhams of land in that area to settle Jews. Today, that area is in Syria, and by the way, part of the negotiations between Israel and Syria over the Golan is compensation for those 100,000 dirhams which have been bought by Baron Rothschild. So the Jews settled it. I'm not going to go into the full historical records, but we know the first time that the Jews ever got to settle there in the days of the second Beis HaMikdash was not even in the days of Hashmonaim. The first one to get these rights was none other than King Herod or Hudus. He got these rights from the Caesar Augustus. Augustus gave him the Caesar to this area, and this area served as a buffer zone between Eretz Yisrael and the road to Babel, and it was in his interest, Caesar's interest. There were a lot of highway robbers there. It was in Caesar's interest that Hudus get control of this area, and he granted him the area of Trachon. Now, the Trachon is mentioned in this brisa of the Tzchumen. Rekham Trachon is mentioned, as I said, on the mosaic floor. And this shows us that when we mention Tzchum Alei Babel, we include not only what Ezra had, not only the small region which we saw on the previous map, but the entire Eretz Yisrael, even stuff that was captured in the days of King Herod, also is considered to be part of Eretz Yisrael. Clearly not like the Tzibur HaSaaretz, whose approach is that Alei Babel is limited only to those areas that Ezra captured. We see that even stuff that Hudus captured 400 years later, 300 years later, also is considered Alei Babel. So we're back to the approach of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who says that since they didn't hold on to it, since they didn't hold on to Beit Shan, therefore the Kedusha dissolved. We have to understand this, because the Gemara simply doesn't say that. The Gemara says that the reason why this is doesn't have Kedusha is because the Olei Babel didn't capture it. The Gemara doesn't say because, okay, so you can explain that what it means didn't capture it. It doesn't have Kedusha because they didn't hold on to it. True. But we're going to take a slightly different approach, and this will go into the fundamentals of understanding the difference between the Kedusha of Olei Babel and the Kedusha of Olei Mitzrayim. The approach that I'm going to suggest here, and as we'll see, it can be based on the Rambam and the Radbaz, is that Olei Babel has two sections, has two parts of the Kedusha. Meaning, there's the original core, which we saw on the first map, the colored map. There's the original core of Eretz Yisrael, which it was captured, which was settled, I should say, so we choose my words carefully, was settled in the days of Ezra. This was settled in the days of Ezra, and that Kedusha is an absolute Kedusha. Even though later on the Jews don't hold on to it, it still remains Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. If later on there are no Jews, a few hundred years ago there's just a handful of Jews in Eretz Yisrael, the Kedusha of Ezra remains. But the rest of the country, which was captured later on, does have Kedusha, but the Kedusha is not an absolute Kedusha. This Kedusha is a temporary Kedusha. The Kedusha does not necessarily remain forever. As Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, basically what I'm doing is a combination of the answer of the Tzibur HaSaaretz and Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Meaning, Rabbi Yaakov Emden already suggested this himself, that maybe since it's not Olei Babel per se, it's not Ezra who did the Kedusha, it doesn't have Kedusha. I'm saying, as we saw, it does have Kedusha, but it has a limited Kedusha. It's a temporary Kedusha, which will not last if they don't hold on to it. We'll soon explain how this works, the lumpness of it, the explanation. But if so, the story is like this. Beit Sha'an was not captured in the days of Ezra. It was only captured in the days of Hashmonai. And while it was captured, while Bnei Yisrael settled there, so it has Kedusha. But once it becomes a non-Jewish city, so then it no longer has Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. And Rebbe came along and realized that originally the Kedusha was a temporary Kedusha, and since today it's not a Jewish city, therefore it does not have Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. Now, what I base it on, that we don't have, that it's not a Jewish city, well, Beit Sha'an, by the way, a couple of shuls were found there, but in general it was not a Jewish population. If you please go to the source pages, I have source 7 and source 9. Source 7 is an aerial view of the ruins of central Beit Sha'an, so we'll just get ourselves a little familiar with Beit Sha'an, the way it looks today. If you're not, it'll come up soon, it might take a couple seconds. If you're not, unfortunately, you're not zocher to be here now, you'll have to see it, you'll have to see it by far. This is an aerial view of Beit Sha'an. Take a look, you see the Roman theater on the right. To the left of it, you see a roof That's a major bathhouse. This is downtown Beit Shan, the center of Beit Shan. We gave a whole lecture about the city of Beit Shan. So we're not going to go into it, what a Roman city looks like. On the left, you see a little mound. That is the Beit Shan from the days of Tanakh. In the days of Tanakh, the cities were sitting on hills. In the Greek and the Hellenistic and Roman period, the city settled nearby. And this is the center of Beit Shan with all the major buildings. It was a non-Jewish, it was a non-Jewish city. In other words, it was major, mostly non-Jewish population. And I mentioned to you before that there were three cities that Rebbe was matir. He permitted Beit Shan, he permitted Caesarea, he permitted Beit Gurion. Now, Beit Shan, and Beit Shan and Beit and Caesarea have something in common. Eretz Yisrael was called by the Romans, it was called Palestina. It was divided up into two regions, Palestina Prima, which means number one, and Palestina Secunda, which means Palestine two. And the capital of Palestina Prima was Caesarea. And the capital of Palestina Secunda was Beit Shan. So these two cities were the capital of, they were local capitals. The Roman governor or whatever sat in these cities. The third city we mentioned is Beit Gurion. Beit Gurion is mentioned in Chazal when Yitzchak gave Esav a bracha, he named Ishmani Ha'aretz Yema Shavecha Mital HaShemayim Me'al. So the Medrash says he gave him the fat of the land. What's the fat of the land? Ishmani Ha'aretz is Italia Shal Yavon. He gave him Italy, which is where the center the Rome. And Mital HaShemayim Me'al, Chazal says Zo Beit Gurion. He gave Beit Gurion. In other words, Chazal is talking about how Beit Gurion is A, it's a beautiful place, it's a place with lots of crops, and B, that is what goes to Esau. So these are cities which are non-Jewish cities. There's another interesting aspect that these three cities have in common. Now, if you take a look at the picture over here, and by the way, interesting is I put source number 9, but we're not going to go to that at this moment. Source number 9 has a sketch of the map of Beit Shan, and it has a list of what each building is. So you can compare the aerial photo with the sketch of the map, and with the sketch map, and be able to see exactly what all these buildings are. So that's in Beit Gurion. I have a picture over here. Source number 10. Source number 10. And source number 10, and this is a source number 10. Take a look at this. The oval thing on the top of the picture is a Roman amphitheater. An amphitheater is not a theater. A theater is a semicircle where they have plays. The amphitheater over here is for gladiator fights, and there are only four of them in Eretz Yisrael, and three of them are by coincidence in Beit Shan, in Caesarea, and Beit Gurion, meaning those major Roman cities. This is where they punished the Jewish prisoners. They tortured them to death by throwing them to lions and other animals. And we spoke about this also at length in one of our Shiurim on Avodah Zarah. If you look in the center, there's that X groove, which is where the animals would come out from into the arena. So these are, again, non-Jewish cities. I also brought one more source, source 11. It may take a drop. This is not from Beit Shan, but I brought this source anyway because this is a typical, maybe not so pleasant, but this is a typical public latrine in a place in France. Something very similar to this was found in Beit Shan. One of the major differences between the Jewish population and the non-Jewish population was the issue of tznius. And the Jews would never go to like a public place. They went to a private place. And if in the Gemara someone was once in the bathroom and a person knocked and wanted to go in, you know, he was like accused of behaving like an Edomite. Because the Edomites, they sat here in public and this public latrine like this was also found in Beit Shan. So these cities are non-Jewish cities in the days of Rebbe, but Rebbe has to verify that the original Kedusha was not from Oli Bava in the days of Ezra. It was later on, and therefore the Kedusha dissolved. How exactly does this work? So time is running short, as usual, but the Rambam, I have the source over here, the last source, the Rambam, Hichas Beis HaBchira, Perek Tezayin, explains he poses a question. We mentioned before that the Kedusha of Ole Mitzrayim dissolved, that the Kedusha of Ole Babel did not dissolve. Now, seemingly, it should be the opposite. The Kedusha of Ole Mitzrayim was much more fantastic, was a conquest that came by war and overwhelmed the population, while Ole Babel, the people came with a permit from the Persian king, and it was, compared to the first Beis HaMikdash, it was not very pretty. Even though, for example, the Beis HaMikdash itself, the people who saw the second Beis HaMikdash, they were crying because they realized the glory there was in the first Beis HaMikdash and what they have today. So why, the Rambam asked the question, why is the Kedusha of the first Beis HaMikdash dissolved and the Kedusha of Ole Babel remaining? So the Rambam says like this, because the first Kedusha happened by conquest. Yeshua captured the land. And conquest is a fact. You capture something, halachically belongs to you. But conquest also doesn't last forever. If someone captures it from you, halachically there's a din of kibush muhammah, and if someone captures it from you, it belongs to him. So, the Kedusha of Yeshua lasts only until someone captures it back. And when Nebuchadnezzar captures it from Bnei Yisrael, the kibush, the conquest of Yeshua, is gone and is no longer has the Kedusha because there was another conquest by the Goyish king. The second Beis HaMikdash, the Jews came by the permission of Koresh, Cyrus, the king of Persia. And since they came with his permission, the Kedusha was not done by conquest. They didn't capture it. The Kedusha was done befeh, as the Rabbah says, it was done verbally, or just the fact that they sat there was Kedusha, but it wasn't done by conquest. It was done befeh. And Kedusha by peh, Kedusha by mouth, will not dissolve even if it was captured by someone else. So the first Kedusha dissolved, but the second Kedusha remains. And if we use this approach, so then there's our answer. That applies to stuff that was captured in the days of Ezra. The stuff that was captured, that was settled in the days of Ezra. Ezra settled it, he didn't capture it, and therefore it's a Kedusha befeh, verbally, but just the fact that he's sitting there. But when it comes to the other territories that were captured by the Hashmonaim or were captured by King Herod, that's once again, that's a conquest. And if it's a conquest, once again, once it's captured back by the non-Jews, so then the conquest dissolves. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden is saying, it's true, they captured it in the days of, of the Hashmonaim, but they didn't hold on to it. Now he says it depends if they held on to the Korban or not. But according to what I'm saying, it's not necessarily so. It's, even if they don't hold on to it at a later period, then also the Kedusha dissolves. And that is why the Kedusha of Beit Sha'an, a Rebbe comes along, and our Rebbe needs the original halacha that wasn't captured by Ole Bavel originally. They left it. And it's true, it was captured in Ezra Chasmonaim, but that does not have consequences once non-Jews were living there. That's the main point. Now the interesting thing is, we saw this mosaic over here, this wonderful mosaic, and there's a lot to talk about it. Professor Zussman did a whole research on it. There's an interesting story that happened 100 years ago. We mentioned Shemitah. In 1880s, the Jews settled the land in Eretz Yisrael once again. Until then, there were no Jewish farmers. All the farmers were the local Arabs. There were no Jewish farmers. We know this from the Shulchan Aruch. And this is the first time the Jewish farmers. And once the Jewish farmers, the issue came, the problem of Shemitah. The mitzvah of Shemitah. It was not an easy mitzvah to keep. The people had to eat. They were literally on the brink of starvation if they were not work the land. And the people were coming up and trying to find solutions for this. There's a sefer called Admas Kodesh by Yitzchak Goldhahn, also a person who researched the geography of Eretz Yisrael, an interesting sefer, and he has a skumas over there from Rishon Zonnefeld, from Rav Kook, from the Ribaz, and from Rav Shulay Diskin, and they're very interesting sefer, and he came along with a very interesting suggestion. When the Gemara says that Rebbe was Matzeh Beit Sha'an, so what does that mean he was Matzeh Beit Sha'an? That means if a person planted in the city in Beit Sha'an, who goes and plants in the city? Obviously you plant in the fields around the city. So how far do the fields around the city go? So we know every city, especially a metropolis, a polis in those days, had lots of fields around it. So we came with an idea that when Rebbe was not to Beit Sha'an, it doesn't just mean the city of Beit Sha'an, but it means the entire valley of Beit Sha'an. The entire valley of Beit Sha'an is 213 square kilometers. And he came along with a suggestion that the Rebbe was matur all of Beit Shaan, and since he was matur all of Beit Shaan, that means 213 square kilometers, the fertile valley of Beit Shaan, which is mentioned Chazal, is a very fertile valley. Over there, the dinim of Shemitah don't apply, and if the dinim of Shemitah don't apply, so then we solved our Shemitah problem because we can plant in the valley of Beit Shaan. That's his suggestion. The Chazon Ish in his sefer does not refer by name to this Sefer Admas Kodesh, but it's clear that he's responding to it, and the Chazon Ish vehemently opposed the idea. He says there's no way, first of all, that it goes so far, 213 kilometers, not a chance. He says it's clearly, A, it's a very limited area around Beit Shaan, because we have no proof otherwise, and B, so they'll say, okay, at least let the places around Beit Shaan be permissible. No, he said, we don't know exactly where the city was in antiquity. Maybe what's called today Beit Shaan is not the exact location of the Beit Shaan of yesteryear. So therefore, the Chazon Ish says that one cannot rely on the Heter of Beit Shaan. So what's interesting thing is that when this mosaic was uncovered, part of the text of the mosaic, lines 5 to 8, and the text of Mosaic have a list of the places that are permissible around Beit Shaan. Now, east of Beit Shaan, 5 kilometers to the east, is the Jordan River. And when it comes to listing the places east of Beit Shaan, it's clearly it doesn't even reach the Jordan River, meaning it's not even 4 kilometers around Beit Shaan. So we know from this, the Mosaic has, by the way, the location of a few places around Beit Shaan from all four directions, and it's clear from this that we're not talking about a large area like the Admas Kodesh suggested. We're not talking about 12 kilometers in each direction. We're talking about a small, minute area around Beit Shaan. In other words, the Chazon Ish was correct with his approach. We're talking about a small section, and therefore we cannot rely to be matter the entire valley of Beit Shaan. But I add to this, I say even furthermore, that's true, but even if the Admas Kodesh's approach was correct, that the whole Valley of Beit Shaan was, Rebbe was not there, that's very nice. But that was made in the days of Rebbe when there was non-Jewish population. But today, that we have Jewish population there, that the Jews own the whole area, so then once again, it remains with Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. The Kedusha that left was only in the days when the Goyim were living there. But today, the Jews are living there. So once again, we get to Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. I tell you an interesting story. This has to do with the Golan Heights. Also part of the text. One of the Goyishe cities in the Golan Heights is called Susita. And Susita was a Goyishe city. Chazal talk about two neighboring cities to each other. One was Jewish and one was Goyish. And where the non-Jewish population caused a lot of trouble for the Jews. And it's a handful of cities, Yericho and Aran. And two cities are mentioned are Tiberia and Susita. Tiberia is west of the Kinneret and Susita is east of the Kinneret. And Susita is clearly a non-Jewish city and archaeologically proven. There's all churches over there. Not one shul has yet to be found in the city. But it goes through a whole list of places around Susita which do have Kedusha. And an interesting story was that in 1967, Israel captured the Golan Heights. When the next Shemitah came along in 1973, in Eretz Israel, a lot of places, what they do is they go to the chief rabbinate. The chief rabbinate does what's called the Heter Mechira. They sell the land to a non-Jew for Shemitah, this way enabling the farmers to work the land. We're not getting into that in full detail now. But they came to the chief rabbi then of Goren, and they asked him to do Heter Mechira, to sell the land for them to go so they can work the land. And Rav Goren thought and thought and thought, and finally says, you know what? He says, I'll tell you the truth. The Golan is not part of Eretz Yisrael. And since it's not part of Eretz Yisrael, you don't have to sell the land. You can work the land during Shemitah without selling the land to a guy. That is Rav Goren's psak. Now this was kind of surprising. Rav Goren was a person who loved Eretz Yisrael so much, and all of a sudden here he comes up with an idea that, that the Golan is not Eretz Yisrael. So the truth of the matter is that Rav Goren loved Eretz Yisrael so much, he believed that once Jews own Eretz Yisrael, then Shemitah becomes the Raisa. It becomes a mitzvah of the Torah. And if Shemitah is a mitzvah of the Torah, then he can't do Heter Mechira. because the mechira, the sale of the land, is a fictitious sale, which of course based on the fact that it's shmitas drabanan. By drabanan, you can do fictitious sales, but when it's the raisa, you can't do it. It's clear from Rav Kook's sefer and the whole etimachir that it's based on the fact that shmitas drabanan. And here, Rav Goren is faced with a dilemma that shmitas drabanan, and he's the chief rabbi and has to do the mechira. And therefore, he tries to avoid as much as possible, and therefore, he came with the conclusion that the Golan is not Eretz Yisrael. But the mosaic in Beit Sha'an proved clearly otherwise, because the mosaic lists the places around Tzitzita which are Eretz Yisrael, and it's has a whole list of places which we today can clearly identify from places in the Golan. Hayaretah Sirot Mitchum Tzitzita, line 9 and 10, and Mezes Fayachrib, Nov, Chaspaya, and Kvat Semach, all these places are known today in the Golan. Not going into details because time is short. So it's clearly these places have Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, and indeed the farmers in the Golan did not accept Rav Goren's Pesach, and they went to someone else who did the Mechira for them. That's what we're told by a farmer who lived in the Golan. Another interesting thing is that it says on this mosaic, it says like this, it gives a list of places that are mutter, that are permissible. But after it goes off through that list, it says like this, in Yesh Malkam Shekhanu Alta Yisrael Choshim Lo Rabbeinu, meaning that even though I gave you a whole list of stuff that places that are not Eretz Yisrael, but that's why are they not Eretz Yisrael, because they are in the hands of non-Jews today. But if tomorrow a Jew will come and buy this area, so then once again it will have Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, and you have to keep Shemitah. So as I said before, today Beit Sha'an is no question. If you live in Beit Sha'an today, you cannot rely on this Gemara and say we don't have to keep Shemitah, because that was when Beit Sha'an was non-Jewish. But today that Beit Sha'an is Jewish, so then it definitely has Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. I want to finish off to mention that one of the first people to study and research Eretz Yisrael from personal learning, the Rishonim, Rabbi Shlomo Apachi, he wrote the Sefer Kaftel Aferach, and he lived in Beit Sha'an. And he lived in Beit Sha'an, and people say to him, how could you live in Beit Sha'an? You're living in Chutzlar. The Gemara says that Beit Sha'an doesn't have Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. And he used an expression, he says, to tell people that Beit Sha'an has a Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, he says, I only have to tell the Susim and the Chamorim, the horses and the donkeys. Meaning it's something that's so obvious, I don't have to go and prove that it's Eretz Yisrael for Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And then he goes through Avlam to explain what the Gemara means, but why it doesn't apply to people who are living there. If you're living there, you're surely living in Eretz Yisrael. So, as I said today, for sure, the Golan and Beit Sha'an and Caesarea and all these places mentioned that Rebbe was Matzah, today for sure, they have to do Shavar Yisrael, and you have to keep all those mitzvot at Lias Baretz.